Hey, it's report card day. Yay. Now, if that brought back feelings of anxiety from when you were in school, relax. You are not being graded, but the president is.
More than 1,400 respondents to an NPR PBS News Marist poll sent in their grades for President Trump's first 100 days. And the most common grade submitted for the president is F. 45% gave him the failing mark. About a quarter of voters gave Trump an A.
Let's hear now from senior political editor and correspondent Domenico Montanaro, who's been analyzing the numbers. Domenico, so no one likes an F. I am very familiar with that grade, by the way, from my high school years.
I don't believe you.
It's true. But why did so many respondents give him an F?
Well, it really looks like it has a lot to do with tariffs and the economy, and just 39% approve of how he's handling the economy. That's his lowest mark ever for that, including for his first term. An even lower 34% approve of his tariffs. Almost 6 in 10 say Trump tariffs on imports will hurt the economy. The percentage of people expecting prices to increase is up 7 points from last month.
Well, that's pretty damning. I mean, the economy is the most important issue for most voters, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, across all age groups, you know, whether it's men or women, the economy, inflation, that comes up over and over again. It was certainly the biggest issue in the 2024 election. And arguably, there was no bigger reason that Trump won than his promises to bring prices down. But the bottom line here is that people are sending a very clear message. They largely think these tariffs are a bad idea.
Okay, now this disapproval of the president can't be just about the economy.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, majorities disapprove of how he's handling most aspects of his job, actually, from tariffs and the economy to foreign policy and immigration, which, by the way, had been a relative strength for Trump. Overall, Trump is down to just a 42% approval rating. That's second only to himself in 2017 for the worst score for any president at the 100-day mark, if you look at the numbers that Gallup has put together since Harry Truman. Things can change. Some presidents who were very high at the 100-point mark went down. Others, like Bill Clinton, who was only at about 45% at 100 days left office with a very high approval rating. So we'll see what happens, but we're in very polarized times. I don't expect much to change people's minds. Trump's base, for example, remains very much intact and is giving him a long leash on things like tariffs because they believe in the long run they'll be good for the economy.
All right, let's get into the sweeping changes Trump's trying to make to the government. And Elon Musk, who's led the charge on that front, what do people think about that?
Yeah, none of that is really popular either. 6 in 10 say that they think that Trump is rushing to make changes. That's up 5 points from last month. About 4 in 10, though, mostly Republicans, think he's doing what needs to be done. Still, overwhelmingly, the majority of Americans, 85%, think that Trump should follow court orders, even ones he doesn't like. Think about things like his deportations and government restructuring through DOGE, that Department of Government Efficiency that Musk has been heading up. As for DOGE and Musk themselves, both are also increasingly unpopular. Just 34% have a favorable view of Musk. That's down 5 points from last month. In Trump's first 100 days, Musk was at Trump's side a lot, but I think that buddy movie A might be coming to an end soon. Not only is Musk unpopular, but his time as an informal government advisor is up at the end of next month, and Musk himself has said that he's going to be spending less time on DOGE given the 71% drop in profits at his company Tesla.
That's NPR's Domenico Montanaro. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
The president campaigned for office promising retribution.
During that campaign, critics and supporters alike warned that it's wrong for a president to go after people he doesn't like. So Trump downplayed his promise, saying his retribution would merely be success. Now Trump is president. In his first 100 days, the president has ordered the U.S. government to target his personal political opponents, as well as law firms, universities, and others. An NPR analysis finds Trump has taken action against more than 100 people and institutions.
NPR investigative correspondent Tom Dreisbach compiled that list and is with us. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Steve.
Who exactly is Trump targeting?
Yeah, it's a really wide spectrum of people and institutions that Trump has gone after. It includes lawyers and law firms, often with ties to Democrats, political opponents, people who worked on investigations into Trump or the January 6th rioters, media companies, universities, and then also people who actually worked in the first Trump administration, but who Trump considers disloyal.
And when we say targeted, what kinds of actions are involved here?
So at maybe the harshest end are these criminal investigations, and Trump has actually ordered multiple Justice Department investigations right from the Oval Office. One of those investigations targets Christopher Krebs. He was a top cybersecurity official in the first Trump administration. Trump fired him back then for saying the 2020 election was safe and secure. And here is what Trump said about Krebs earlier this month.
He's the fraud. He's a disgrace. So we'll find out whether or not it was a safe election. And if it wasn't, he's got a big price to pay.
Then there's Miles Taylor, who also served in the first Trump administration. Back then, Taylor wrote this anonymous op-ed that said Trump was erratic and dangerous. Here is what Trump said about him.
I think he's guilty of treason, if you want to know the truth, but we'll find out. And I assume we're recommending this to the Department of Justice.
Yes, sir.
So Trump was not just ordering an investigation into Taylor, he was also effectively telling the investigators what he thought the outcome should be. Both Krebs and Taylor say they are being retaliated against for telling the truth.
It's striking to think about this, Tom, because Trump, of course, accused President Biden of using the Justice Department against him. Lawfare is what Republicans called it. He said that was wrong. Biden denied he was doing any such thing. Trump is openly doing that, openly doing the thing that he said was wrong. So what other government powers is he using?
Well, we found the administration using more than 10 different agencies in various ways, not just the Justice Department, which we should say is also announcing criminal investigations into the Democratic governor and attorney general of New Jersey over immigration policy. Trump has also pulled Secret Service protection for two of President Biden's children, Hunter and Ashley. Media companies that Trump dislikes are facing investigations from the FCC. That includes NPR, we should say. Mm-hmm. Universities are facing investigations from the Department of Education. International students who protested the war in Gaza have also faced ICE detention and deportation.
Well, what does the administration say about this?
Well, they didn't respond to our request for comment for this story. And on the one hand, the White House says that Trump is ending what they call the weaponization of government, which you just mentioned. And when they're pressed on this issue, though, and the fact that Trump is actually directing specific criminal investigations from the Oval Office, well, they say their investigations are merited and it's about accountability.
What do the people targeted by the power of the presidency have to say?
Well, some are very confident that Trump's actions are unconstitutional and they won't hold up in court. In the cases of the law firms, for example, judges have actually blocked parts of the orders for violating the Constitution. One judge said it was a, quote, shocking abuse of power from the administration. But even the process of investigation can be stressful and scary. Law firms are losing clients. People have lost jobs. And multiple sources said they could not talk with us because speaking out just puts a bigger target on your back.
NPR's Tom Dreisbach is speaking about what he found in the facts of his reporting. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Steve.
In recent months, the Trump administration has locked up and tried to deport multiple students who advocated on behalf of Palestinian rights in the midst of the Israel-Hamas war.
Our co-host Leila Fadel is in Vermont, where she became the first journalist to meet with any of the students in the facilities where they are held. She talked with Columbia University student Mohsen Madawi in the Northwest State Correctional Facility in St. Albans, Vermont. Madawi is a green card holder, a permanent resident, detained at what he thought would be his naturalization interview for citizenship.
Leila joins us now from our member station, Vermont Public. Leila, Madawi is a student at Columbia. Why was he in Vermont?
Well, this is where he lives, where he calls home. And I sat down with him in the state prison where he's being held since there are no immigration detention centers here. And the first thing I asked when he walked into the room where I was waiting was, how are you?
I am centered. Internally, I am at peace. While I still know deeply that this is a level of injustice that I am facing, I have faith. I have faith that justice will prevail.
And when he says justice, he means his release and his ability to stay in this country. His lawyers filed a petition in federal court here in Vermont accusing government officials of violating his First Amendment right to free speech and due process in what they argue is a policy by these officials to silence Palestinian rights advocates.
Did he tell you about the day he was detained?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a roller coaster. I mean, he's lived here for 10 years, and he was on track to graduate next month with a bachelor's from Columbia. And he went to this meeting thinking he would finally become an American citizen. After growing up in a Palestinian refugee camp in the Israeli-occupied West Bank, he says he only understood the concept of freedom of movement or freedom of speech without retaliation from living here. But because he had watched the experiences of other students, he knew there was a risk.
I see the risk, I see the opportunity, and I want the American people to see this too.
See what?
To see this level of injustice, that I'm doing everything legally, that I have prepared and studied for the Constitution, and that I went willingly and respected the law.
And despite that, he says, he's in prison, although the government wasn't able to move him to Louisiana like other students, at least not yet, because of an injunction a judge granted here.
And what is the government saying about why they want to deport him?
Now, he's not charged with a crime, but as with most of these students, the government is invoking a rarely used Immigration Act. Court filings say his presence has, quote, adverse consequences for foreign policy. In this case, they say his presence would undermine the Middle East peace process and a policy to combat anti-Semitism. A letter for the Secretary of State was the only evidence the government submitted this week as proof of this. It did not elaborate on how his presence supposedly undermines Middle East peace or how he supposedly fueled anti-Semitism.
And what have his lawyers said?
One of his lawyers, Luna Drewby, says the accusations are completely false and the government is, quote, scraping the bottom of the barrel to punish students for the advocacy of Palestinian rights. Mahdawi has been very vocal about his opposition to anti-Semitism and is part of peace initiatives with Israeli and Jewish students. Tomorrow, the federal court here in Vermont will hear Mahdawi's request for immediate release as this case continues.
That's NPR's Leila Fadel. Leila, looking forward to hearing more of this on Morning Edition. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. I see you in D.C.
Mark Carney has been elected as Prime Minister of Canada, according to the projections from the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation.
This was seen as a referendum on which candidate could best handle the United States under President Trump, who placed tariffs on Canada and sparked a wave of Canadian nationalism. Carney defeated Conservative Party leader Pierre Poilievre.
Poilievre's momentum began to slip when former Prime Minister Justin Trudeau resigned earlier this year, which gave the Liberals a lift. But the real boost came when President Trump began targeting Canada's economy and its sovereignty. Many Canadians were outraged by Trump's threat to make Canada the 51st state.